Welcome to Gun for Hire Radio, New Jersey's first and only pro-Second Amendment talk show, where we talk about guns, the shooting sports, and protecting your most valuable assets, yourself and your family. I'm Sandy Berardi.
And I'm Master Trainer Anthony Colandro.
And together, we share the how-tos and what-fors of legal, responsible, and safe gun ownership, especially in the dangerous and crowded urban environment we live and work in. We answer questions and give advice. We talk about the news, current events, and issues that are important to gun owners. And we do it all from behind the Second Amendment Iron Curtain, in the shadows of the New York City skyline.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Gun for Hire Radio.
Hey, Ed, how are you doing?
Not too bad today, Sandy. I got some good news, some bad news, some indifferent news, and some news.
There's indifferent news? That's pretty cool.
Talk to me.
I'm dragging a little bit, you know.
What's going on?
I just finished that pen class, the executive pen class.
Yes, Gun for Hire hosted a 6-hour intensive executive self-defense pen class by Atenzia Kali.
Unbelievable.
We had 20 students today and 10 instructors from the Kali family came down. You want to tell us a little bit about your experience? Six hours?
I didn't know what to expect, really. I brought my wife, and she kicked ass.
We had four women in the class.
Yeah. It was actually six.
Oh, six women. That's right.
Yeah, there were six. Two more showed up. Yeah.
That's right. Six women in the class, 14 men.
Yeah, it was just amazing, and they brought like 10 instructors. It was just incredible.
But and for you people out there that don't know about this, we used regular pens.
Yeah, yeah.
We used a regular Pentel pen.
Yeah, I thought we were going to be using tactical pens, but we ended up using just regular pens from Staples, right?
No worry about TSA or anybody taking them away from you.
Now I know how to disembowel people with a Pentel pen.
Well, the whole process from with Kali is a chain, you know, a wound chain where you hit somebody in a certain area, causes their body to react in a certain way and expose another vulnerable area.
Yeah.
And then when you hit them in that vulnerable area, their body reacts in a certain way and exposes another vulnerable area. And there's 9 vulnerable areas in the chain. And that's what everybody learned today, to take a pen and go through that chain, you know, obviously going for the primary targets first and then secondary targets after that. But if they couldn't do that, you know, whatever target they could get. And the females did great. They were
coming around, striking
the guys in the back and the femoral arteries. And it was a great class. And I interviewed all the women afterwards, and they all love the class, and they want to know when the next level is coming out, which we're going to have to work on.
It was amazing. I mean, you know, without giving away what the actual class is about, the level of knowledge that goes into this, the anatomy and physiology especially, and the body mechanics.
I mean, one of our goals today was to have you look at the anatomy of another human as plumbing and know where to put the biggest leaks, basically.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
Okay, where to inflict the largest leaks as fast as possible.
What's nice about it is you can do this technique anywhere, anytime, on an airplane. Had anybody on those airplanes on September 11th known this particular technique, there wouldn't have been any issue at all.
The only problem with the first couple of planes was they thought it was a routine hijacking.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
so,
you know, just like they used to
Cuba.
Teach, yeah, like they used to teach women in the 50s and 60s, just comply, do what he says, and you know, maybe you survive. Today, it would be nice to have someone on a plane with a pen doing their thing.
They still teach that in New Jersey, right?
Jersey were to run and cower.
Run and hide, yes. Yeah, well, that's what we should have, shouldn't we? We should host instead of...
Running cower.
Yeah,
running cower. First steps, running cower for New Jersey and New York residents.
That's like the old duck and cover.
Wait. Run, throw your wallet or purse, and cower.
And then cower in fear. Yes.
While taking jewelry off and leaving a trail. That's definitely the way we have to do it in New Jersey.
I like that. So what's going on in the news?
Well, I don't want to beat a dead horse here, but Fast and Furious continues to piss me off.
Not a dead horse, baby. And that thing's galloping.
It seems now, Melson, on July 4th, when we were recording the awesome 4th of July podcast, Melson met with the DOJ, Department of Justice, and it seems like he's going to be throwing everybody on the under the bus. Above him and alongside him, he's not going to be the fall guy. He's not going anywhere. He wants everybody to know that other departments, ATF, FBI, CIA, they were all into on this cover-up. And son of a bitch, believe it or not, our government had this huge thing going on. He was the acting director. He didn't even know what was going on. They want him to take the hit. He will not take the hit. It looks like it's going to go up to Holder. It might even go up to Obama, and there's going to be other heads to roll. Two more crimes in Arizona, crime scenes where they found more of these Fast and Furious guns.
Yeah, the guns are turning up on crime scenes everywhere.
So people out there, listeners out there, and my fellow patriots, keep aware of what's going on in the news. Contact your legislator. Send them emails, voicemails, call them. Tell them that you're pissed off at this Fast and Furious thing, and we're not going to take a ruse like this anymore, especially now that they're going to start twisting it and saying that, you know, the NRA or something had to do with it, or us honest, law-abiding citizens that are gun owners had something to do with it. So I'm very upset about this whole thing, and I hope Melson stays by his convictions and fights it through the end now.
Well, you know, he's a bureaucrat, and he's going to try to cover his behind. But I think one of the things that really irritates most people as it starts to come about, starts to open up like peeling back an onion, is the fact that taxpayer dollars were used for this. It was $10 million channeled to Operation Gunrunner. Which
$10 million
is,
that we know about.
That we know about, yeah.
Yes. We don't know what the reciprocal money was and extension right. money. We don't know right. what that was, how much more. It's probably like $30 or $40 million.
And there were over 4,500 of these operations around the country. So who knows how many of Operation Gunrunner individual operations actually turned into a Fast and Furious-like type of a...
Correct.
And what, you know, everybody's called me crazy, right? Remember when I said that this is not something that was a mistake, that this was orchestrated, you're a nut, you're a conspiracy theorist? No. Now we're starting to find out that... this was, in fact, to bolster the numbers that the Obama administration had becoming.
Correct.
Maybe this was part of that, you know, under the radar thing.
Well,
that,
I have a more national news in addition to the under the radar. Hmm. 2 days ago, on the six-month anniversary of the shooting of Representative Gabriel Giffords, the Obama administration had a meeting. And this came from the White House press secretary, Jay Carney. He said that there are reforms being crafted by the Department of Justice, that the president directed the attorney general to form working groups and key stakeholders to identify common sense measures that would improve American safety and security while fully respecting Second Amendment rights.
No.
Can anybody say BS? Okay. Yeah. Real quick, Sandy, that process is well underway at the Department of Justice with stakeholders on all sides. Do you think there's any pro-gun people on that side? No.
No.
On one lopsided... Not.
The Brady campaign. Yeah, is this going to be like a Brady campaign?
Correct.
You know, they're working family through, banquet.
They're working through these complex issues, and they expect to have more specific announcements in the near future. Just how near? Carney would say not far in the future. Okay? So here we go. They're going to use the Giffords shooting. You're going to see magazine capacities. You're going to see, you know, how many guns you can buy become national laws. And they're going to try to do stuff like this through presidential action and executive executive session rather than go through
the legislature. Well, I mean, why should we go through the legislature like the Constitution prescribes? We should just make executive order. That is the MO for this particular administration. They're not going to have to do anything that they're going to have to vote on or that their lackeys are going to have to vote on and risk their kingdoms. They're going to push it through legislation. He's known for doing this. It's what the state of New Jersey has done for so many years.
Our 2C criminal justice code is a phone book.
Yeah. I was at your school one time when the chief of police had come in for your copy of the 2C codes because they were having an argument
yep.
over what was legal and what wasn't legal.
Yeah, it was to retreat. They were talking about the right to retreat, and they were arguing about it, and they asked for my copy of the 2C criminal justice code. And it was the police chief.
The police. And we're sitting here, and a couple of SWAT guys, yes. right? So yes. we're sitting here going, these are the guys rappelling through your windows, and they don't know the proper interpretation of the 2C code.
We're in trouble.
We're in trouble.
So that's our news on a national level. Now, local level, Newark, New Jersey, 2 days ago, the city council passed an ordinance. Any eating establishment that seats 20 people or less cannot stay open after 9 p.m. at night unless they hire an armed security officer to be there for all of the operating hours that they're open after 9 p.m.
Oh, my God.
Now...
Want to go to Newark for dinner?
We had an off-duty police officer shot in a pizzeria a few weeks ago.
And this is the response to that.
So the response is, so now we're going to take Joe, who owns a pizzeria in Newark that does a ton of business, 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, 1, 2 in the morning on Friday and Saturday night, has to pay a security company, a bona fide security company, $40 an hour, $50 an hour, and get a $20, $25 an hour security officer in their establishment because the owner of the establishment is not capable of owning or using or having a carry permit to protect their own business. And who better to protect your own interest than you? Yeah. Listen, I don't know about you, but if I was doing executive protection for $100 an hour for you and someone came to kill you, I'm going to duck and let them kill you.
You bet. Okay? I'm making $20 an hour. A guy walks in with a Mac-10. I'm turning the other cheek.
I'm going to tell the guy he's over there.
He's over there. The money's in the draw.
So this is the response. Now I see a crack here.
Really?
Yes, I see a crack because if there's a chink in the armor here, if Newark passed this and all of these small business owners, and there could be hundreds of them, Newark is a big city.
Yes, it is.
If we could get these owners pissed off and get them to rally together, they could have a fight with our state and our government and say, wait a minute, why can't we as law-abiding citizens have carry permits? Now, the first thing the state will say is if they own the business, and even stronger if they own the property to businesses, but it's not a deal breaker here, they can carry on their premises, but they can't step outside into common areas, all right? You can carry
in your
business.
So they can't come in the sidewalk or through the door.
Or walk to their car with the money at the end of the night when they're most likely to be robbed.
Right, exactly. They got a big bag of money.
Correct. So they could argue for carry permits.
Yeah.
Okay, this could be a deal breaker. Why do they have to be forced
to pay for someone else?
Armed security. Yeah. Otherwise, they're going to have to shut at 9 o'clock at night.
Now, what about the poor bodega owner who is just about making... I mean, the economy
is bad.
Well,
it has to be an eating establishment
enough.
It has to have 20 seats or less, which I don't understand this. 20 seats or less. So McDonald's doesn't need security.
Ooh, surprise, surprise.
Okay, so who was behind some of this? Who was paying some money? So you have McDonald's and Wendy's and a few other larger eating establishments, you know, White Castle, Popeye's Fried Chicken, but all the smaller places, they at 20 seats or less, I don't know where they derive this number, but 20 seats or less, they have to have an armed security officer on duty. Are you kidding me? Seriously. But I'm telling you, I haven't spoken to Scott Bach about this yet, you know, the president of the Association of Rifle and Pistol Clubs and NRA Board of Director, but I'm going to talk to Scott about it because we might be able to rally these restaurant owners, these eating establishment owners, we might use this as you know, a rallying cry and some leverage to get that carry permit in the state of New Jersey.
Well, it's about time we banded together and got off our behinds and did something.
So
I'm all with you.
Let's see what happens.
Absolutely. We'll be back right after this.
With over 25 years expert knowledge and experience to help you select the perfect firearm, the Bullet Hole has one of the largest firearm selections in the New York metro area, with over 300 handguns in stock. You'll find all the major brands, including Glock, Ruger, Smith & Wesson, Kimber, Sig Sauer, and Springfield Armory. And if you're looking for a hunting or tactical rifle or shotgun, they have an extensive inventory of top brands like Benelli, Bushmaster, Remington, and a full line of police equipment and shooting accessories. And the best part is, you can shoot there too. The Bullet Hole has a 10-port, state-of-the-art, climate-controlled indoor range and is the only indoor range in the New York metro area that can handle anything from handgun to high-powered rifle. The range is bright, clean, and safe with full-time, helpful, certified range safety officers and an air scrubber filtration system, like breathing mountain fresh air. and a large selection of range ammo at really great prices. There's even a full-time gunsmith on staff, and you can even get your New Jersey or Pennsylvania hunting licenses. The Bullet Hole is on Rutgers Street, across from the main Gun for Hire campus, less than 10 miles from Manhattan. And if you're a law enforcement officer or armed security guard and need to qualify, just drop by any Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. No appointment necessary. Find out more on the web at bulletholenj.com or just follow the link from the gunforhireradio.com resource page. The Bullet Hole, North Jersey's gun authority for over 25 years. Come see Manny, Jen, or Jennifer and tell them you heard about them on Gun for Hire Radio.
Hit it, hit it. Okay, welcome back.
Hello, hello again.
You stayed awake this time.
I'm awake. I'm aware. I'm reading something in amazement.
Hey, maybe you're amped up today. I don't know what. Much caffeine?
No caffeine for me. I'm not allowed. Oh. I'm reading the TSA Prohibited Items Guidelines for Travelers. In lieu of our pen class today, yesterday, one of the students emailed me and said, take a look at this, because a tactical pen could be construed as a Kubotan, and Kubotans are banned on the list of what you can carry on or check on. Now, I just find out, I'm looking at the items, sharp objects. This is for carry-on. Scissors, metal with pointed tips and blades shorter than 4 inches, are allowed to be carried on.
And based on what I learned today, I can kill you in all 9 spots.
So I just found this out. So I guess they're not taking nail clippers anymore. Anybody can look at this. TSA.gov /travelers. You can look at this. Now, obviously, cattle prods, hammers, drill bits are banned. I found
you
this out.
I have to leave my cattle prod on.
Yes. No nunchucks, no throwing stars, unbelievably. No self-defense sprays like mace. But mace is banned. We can't carry mace, but you're going to love this. Aerosols.
Yeah.
You can bring an aerosol on the plane, okay? Under 100 milliliters or 3.4 ounces. Any type of non-flammable liquid, gel, or aerosol paint. So you could go to the hobby store and buy the little can of tester's paint that you would have spray painted a model.
Yeah.
You're allowed to carry that on. Now, let me ask you, if I spray that in the face of someone on the flight crew and hit him in the eyes, is that not just as effective as mace?
Yeah, I would say so. But, and it leaves a mark, too.
And it you can definitely brand somebody. But this was the best. This is the kicker. Two items come up as yes. All right. Actually, 3 items. Number one is screwdrivers 7 inches or less in length are allowed to be carried on.
That's amazing. Are you serious?
It's right here. Paper. Tools 7 inch or less in length, and wrenches and pliers 7 inches or less in length. I can bring on a vice grip, a Phillips head, and a slotted screwdriver. I could be the tool belt ninja on a plane if I want. I am allowed to carry those items on and a can of spray paint and a pair of scissors as long as they're less than 4 inches. Can you believe this? I mean, I don't know how long it's going to be before the TSA catches up to it.
It'll be 100 years. Who are we? Wait a minute. Who are we talking about?
But everything else is no's. They should have just printed one big no. But those are the yeses on the list. Our TSA is bass ackwards.
Oh, my God.
I can bring on spray paint, scissors,
so you can stab them and tag them.
I'm amazed. So you guys and girls listening, go on to TSA. And this started, it's part talkbacks, part started. One of our students, Mike, who stopped in a school 2 weeks ago and asked me what the TSA approved cases were. And I went over it with him, you know, hard shell cases for travel. And he Facebooked me 2 days later and said he had no problem. He said TSA was very nice. Continental was very nice. He had his gun empty in one lock container, and he had his ammo in another lock container. And his flight was flawless to and from. So it went over really well.
You travel a lot like that, don't you?
I travel a lot. I have 2 metal locking cases that Gun Vault makes. And I keep the gun in one, and I keep the ammo in another.
You know, I hate to admit this, but, you know, I disarm myself when I try. And you know how much I travel.
Yeah, and, well, and I think you're ignorant. I think you should, you know, yeah, the Masoud Ayoub's 10 commandments of concealed carry. Commandment number one is, if you can carry, carry. Why would you want to be pinned behind the lobby chair of the Sheraton where you're staying, yeah, wishing you had, yeah, a gun?
I know.
Or wishing you brought your gun.
I do travel into some pretty sketchy areas.
So,
too.
I mean, I'm flying to Kentucky. I'm flying to Atlanta. I'm flying to Wyoming.
I think the hassle, just the anticipated
hassle. But it's not
hassle.
That bad. They're more concerned with the gray foam in your TSA-approved case than they are with the firearm, because they want to make sure you don't have any explosives hidden.
Really?
My biggest fear is that my gun is get stolen from my bag. Now, the gun vault cases I use have a cable on them, and I attach the cable inside.
To the suitcase.
So they'll have a hard time stealing it. And, you know,
how do you
not
do that?
Sure.
What do you put an eye hook? It
comes that way. Gun Vault makes it. Yeah, they make these little TSA-approved cases. They're really nice. They're like little cigar boxes.
Oh.
I'll have Jose Chicharone post a picture of them on the website for you guys and girls to take a look at.
Maybe we could just put a link directly to.
There you go. Yeah. I better start getting a commission on this stuff.
Like
our
to.
Listenership.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank our listenership, too. 15,000 downloads in the first week where we had episode 4 come up.
Man,
episode
you people
five.
Need to get a life. You really seriously got, if,
no, I want
if
you
got nothing better to do with an hour than to sit and listen to two clowns like us.
If you like what you hear, if it's iTunes or Zoom, please go on and post a positive or negative, you know, well, positive, no negative. I'll come find you.
That's right.
And
questions,
comments, concerns, keep them coming. We have plenty. But yes, so now you have the rules and regulations for the TSA. So get your scissors, your tester spray paint, and your 7-inch or less screwdriver. Print that out with you. And when you go to fly, you know, you can carry them all onto the plane with you.
That's great. Just in case you want to huff a little paint, yep, and fix something on the plane.
And TSA approved cases, we will, yes, have them up on the website for travel. Just be careful that you do not fly into a gun unfriendly state. If you fly
now,
out of
explain
New
that to me.
Okay. Well, if you want. If you fly out of Newark into Arizona and then back to Newark, you're fine. If you land in New York,
You're screwed.
Well, if you land in New York and you get off the plane and get into a car, you're fine. But if you get off the plane because the plane had, you know, technical problems or fuel problems, and then you have to go through security again, if they give you your bag with your gun, you will get locked up. We had a gentleman who spent, you know, 18 days on Rikers Island because of that.
No,
and he lost in court, by the way.
I can't then just recheck my bag and reclaim my firearm?
No, because you're rechecking a bag that in a state that doesn't allow.
That has a firearm that I don't have a FOID
card
for.
You'll go to prison.
Oh, my goodness.
It's happened a few times.
That has happened in New Jersey. I've been meaning to ask you.
Yes, it happened in New Jersey once. The gentleman checked into a hotel and waited for his flight the next day. And when he went through security, they alerted the Port Authority and they locked him up because he had a gun. And the argument was, he said that he never opened the gun case and didn't touch the gun, so he didn't break any federal transportation laws. The judge argued, and the prosecutor, that he must have opened the case and touched the gun, and based on that, they found him guilty.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
What you must have done.
What you must have done. Correct. And we've already had the state Supreme Court rule against us on the cases for the Port Authority, even though it's you have no... You know, no pull over where the pilot can land or cannot land, and you're not liable, you are liable.
Wow.
So I tell it, I landed in Ronald Reagan Airport coming home from Louisville, Kentucky from an NRA convention. They had high winds in Newark, and I told my wife, I said, I'm not getting off the plane. And then I told her, if we do get off the plane and they give us our luggage to check us into a hotel, I'm going to rent a car and drive home.
Yeah.
I'm not going to check back into Ronald Reagan Airport in D.C.
Oh,
I'd still
God.
Be there in prison.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd be broadcasting from Stalag 13.
From Cell Block 6. And here are all the boys
my
in
roommate.
Cell Block 6. Me and my roommate.
Me and my roommate, who I'm washing his underwear in the sink.
Exactly. Twice a day, just because he said I have to.
So it's not that much of a hassle to travel in an airline with guns as long as you follow the rules. I recommend to all of our students that they should call ahead at the airline to make sure no rules or regulations have changed. JetBlue and Continental are very friendly. Delta, I had one little glitch once because the ticket girl, you know, was having a problem understanding it. But what we fail to realize, especially us handgunners, new generation handgunners, is hunters have been traveling for the past 70 years. As long as air travel has been commercial, they've been traveling with their rifles and their shotguns. And some guys going to Alaska have been traveling with, you know, handguns and everything also. So the airlines are pretty much used to it. As long as you fess up and you tell them you're checking a gun And, you know, you check everything in nice and you don't have any loaded magazines and you don't have anything that can be explosive. Another thing to think about while we're on the subject of traveling is if you use your range bag as a travel bag, if there's a live round laying around,
not a
good idea.
Yeah.
If it tests hot for explosives because of the cordite and other powders in the bullets, not a good idea.
Yeah.
Your shoes, if you shoot in an indoor range a lot, the top of your shoes can test hot.
Really?
Yeah, because all the chemicals, the powder will be attracted to your laces.
Oh, it just lays right
on top of the laces. Yes, and the suede shoes or something. I've heard stories of people going through an airport and their shoes have tested hot. So you shouldn't wear the same shoes that you wear to the range. And definitely don't use a range bag, guys and girls, as a travel bag.
Yeah,
you know, we've all found a loose round, a 9mm or 22. We don't need a TSA agent to find that.
Well, that did happen here. One of our Second Amendment attorney friends is defending it was in arms, an international arms dealer, wasn't it?
Yes, international arms dealer.
Who came through Newark?
I also have a friend who's a federal air marshal that was flying home from Israel, and he had a 50 BMG round in his bag. He actually left Newark to Israel undetected. Because they don't check the air marshals.
Do the air marshals have to declare that they're air marshal show a badge?
Yes, they do. And believe it or not, the only country the air marshals land in where they don't have to surrender their guns is Israel. Every other
they're
country,
welcome there.
Yes, every other country have to surrender their guns. But our air marshal friend of mine got stopped coming back from Israel. The X-ray machine picked up a 50 BMG round. Almost started an international incident. Believe it or not, after the supervisors intervened, he got to take it with him. Okay? Only the Israelis would be on board with us.
Ahead. It's only it's one. That's nice. You got any extra? That's
true. So, yeah, any other country, he'd still be spread eagle somewhere. Okay. So these are some of the precautions for travel. Obviously, traveling with a car is a little different. Traveling in a car, locked or fastened case, ammo kept in a separate locked or fastened case. When you look at the
handgun, you keep them in the same suitcase?
Yes, you can.
Okay.
Yes, you can. And when you're traveling through states, if you have a non-resident carry permit, you can carry it. If you're traveling through states that don't have a non-resident carry permit, that better be locked and fastened. The ammo better be locked and fastened.
Well, that's one of the reasons I came for your non-resident carry permit.
We should talk about the pros and cons of non-resident carry permit in a future show.
Yeah, I actually do think, because especially here in New Jersey, in other states, it's not really a big issue because everybody's free.
46 states are issuing carry permits now.
That's fantastic.
We do, too. New Jersey's a shell issue state. It's up to the judge.
Yeah, and the judge shall decide not to issue.
Less than 1,100 private citizens have carry permits in the state of New Jersey.
Wow. And we are the most populated state in the union.
Yep.
When we get back, we're going to be talking about what is a court safe.
Or court-proof gun.
A court-proof gun.
My opinion.
All right. We'll be back.
I want to tell you about my friend Katie. Katie is a nurse, and she was attacked on her way home from work. She was totally taken by surprise, and although Katie is only 5 feet tall and 106 pounds, she was easily able to drop her 6'4", 250-pound attacker to his knees and get away unharmed. Katie wasn't just lucky that day. She was prepared. In her pocketbook, a harmless-looking lipstick, which really contained a powerful man-stopping aerosol propellant. It's not like it was in our grandmother's day. Today, just going to and from work or to the mall can have tragic consequences. The FBI says a violent crime is committed every 15 seconds in the United States, and a forcible rape happens every 5 minutes. And chances are, when something happens, no one will be around to help. It looks just like a lipstick, so no one will suspect a thing, which is important since experts say getting the jump on your attacker is all about the element of surprise. Inside this innocent-looking lipstick is the same powerful stuff used by police and the military to disarm even the most powerful armed aggressor. In fact, National Park Rangers use the very same formula that's inside this little lipstick to stop 2,000-pound vicious grizzly bears dead in their tracks. It's like carrying a personal bodyguard with you, in your purse or your pocket. Darkness brings danger. Muggers and rapists use darkness to their advantage. We all know what it's like to be walking at night and hear footsteps coming at us from behind. Who's there? If it's somebody bad, will you be protected? Your life may depend on it. My friend Katie's close call needs to be a wake-up call for all of us, myself included. Pick up a lipstick bodyguard and keep it with you always.
The Lipstick Bodyguard is available at all Gun for Hire locations and events, at fine boutiques nationwide, or at lipstickbodyguard.com. Our competitors this week for our Criminals Not Quite Ready for Prime Time runoff include Eric Kogan, 33, who was arrested in Port St. Lucie, Florida, after, according to police, presenting a holdup note to a teller at a TD Bank. To get to the teller, Kogan had to walk right past a sheriff's cruiser parked outside in front of the bank and step over a deputy in uniform seated at the bank's entrance. Matthew Huddleston, also 33, pled guilty in Mobile, Alabama, to robbing a Regions Bank using a hold-up note that mentioned a gun. He got away, but was arrested after he returned a few minutes later to, you know, ask for the hold-up note back. 61-year-old Joseph Pierce left the PNC Bank in Okeechobee, Florida, empty-handed, despite having passed a teller a note demanding a, quote, sack full of cash. Pierce, however, forgot to bring a sack with him. And the teller? Well, she didn't have one either. Joseph Bryce, 21, of Clarkston, Washington, was just indicted on one count of having manufactured a bomb in 2010. Bryce inadvertently called attention to himself by ordering his bomb-making components under the name of Timothy McVeigh. And in our Garden State Crazy Department, Hopewell Township, New Jersey officials, responding to noise complaints, passed an ordinance limiting roosters' access to hens to only 10 days a year. And in wacky old England, where possession of a toenail clipper in public can land you in the hoosegow for 20 years, a judge in Britain's Cambridge Crown Court sentenced two teenage boys to jail for burglary, but allowed their 20-year-old partner, who has a much longer criminal record, to have a non-custodial sentence because he has a, quote, cleanliness disorder that the jailhouse would traumatize. And as if that's not wacky enough, apparently 41-year-old David Truscott can't keep himself out of the manure pit at the Woodbury House Farm in Redruth, Cornwall. Truscott was arrested there for violating a restraining order after being caught two times previously wallowing in the farm's manure pit while masturbating. The prosecutor in the case, oddly coming to his defense, explained, "This seems to be the only place Truscott can gratify himself in that particular manner." But hey, Britain's safer now that they banned butter knives. Okay, we're back.
I'm up.
Yes, you're
up. Still up.
You know, you got to wake up.
No Demerol today.
What is a court-proof gun?
No such thing, but I'm going to give you my opinion on the closest thing there is to a court-proof gun.
Ooh.
Court-proof gun. When you live in a socialist republic like New Jersey or New York or Massachusetts or California, you have to be careful the gun you use for home defense.
Hmm.
I believe that the gun you use for home defense should be something that's widely accepted by police and or military, and the ammo should also be the same. So, in other words, shooting someone with a 44 Magnum or a 50 Desert Eagle could be construed as excessive force. In fact, there was a case where someone shot someone with a 10 millimeter, and the prosecutor argued that it was excessive force, and they won.
What, really?
Yes, they won. He won on an appeal, but he lost the first time, and he went to prison for excessive force. It was the only firearm he owned was a 10 millimeter, and because it wasn't used by police or military at the time, even though the FBI initiated the 10 millimeter.
The FBI was, yeah, right.
So he lost, and then he won the case on an appeal. In New Jersey, I tell a lot of my students, when I give concealed carry classes and CCW classes, if you want the ultimate court-proof gun in New Jersey, carry or have at home the identical gun that your police department uses with the identical ammunition.
Really?
Let's see a prosecutor argue that you made a bad firearm choice.
Yeah, that's okay? Right.
If you want to trump that, carry what the state police carry.
Which is what? What
do we know? SIG P229 in 9mm.
Okay.
The state police carry. Imagine a prosecutor trying to argue that the gun you were using was poorly designed or not fit for self-defense or something. Your defense attorney can stand up and say, really? Well, does that mean that the superintendent of state police and the police training commission picked a faulty firearm, blah, 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 blah. So I like that idea. I think that's a great idea.
That's
so,
a fantastic
but
idea.
If you live in a town like Belleville and they carry Glock 21s with 230 grain hollow point plus P's, that would be a great home defense gun.
Now, the state police, do they carry hardball ammunition?
No, they carry hollow points.
Oh, they do. Okay.
But the day they retire, they're not mature enough to carry hollow points anymore.
So they're not allowed to?
No. All retired cops in New Jersey have a directive by our attorney general not to carry hollow point bullets until she issues her directive, which we've been waiting for a few years now.
And the military use hardball.
Well, they use ball because of malfunctioning problems, and it's a NATO round.
Yeah.
Round nose ammo, and they're just spraying and praying, basically, when they shoot.
Well, you know where that stems from? It goes back to military medicine. If I shoot you with a hard tip, let's put it that way, a hard tip bullet, and it goes through and through, I wound you, right?
Correct.
Now, if I kill you, you leave one soldier off the battlefield. If I wound you, it takes 10 soldiers on average off the battlefield.
Correct.
It's the Hague Accord, not the
Geneva Convention, Hague. It's interesting because that was the argument to go with 5.56, switching from 308 to 5.56 in Vietnam was if you shoot someone in the shoulder with a 308, you're probably going to kill them. If you shoot them in the shoulder with a 223, you're probably going to wound them and you're going to knock 10 guys out of the war.
Yeah, which is
plus, you could carry more ammo with a 223 because it's a smaller round.
It's a smaller round.
Flatter bullet for the most part. But going back to court-proof gun, obviously, if you have a revolver, if it's a double-action revolver with an exposed hammer, that could be construed as not being a court-proof gun because a prosecutor could argue that you have cocked that gun and fired it single action, which is only like a half-pound trigger pull.
Now, my carry gun is a Smith 642.
Does it have an exposed or concealed hammer?
Concealed hammer.
Concealed hammer is a great court-proof gun because a prosecutor can't argue that you might have cocked it accidentally firing it in single action. So I tell students that if you're going to have a home defense revolver, it should be a concealed hammer or a hammerless model.
Oh, okay.
So that the prosecutor can only construe that you fired that gun in double action.
I guess I need to make some changes.
Now, semi-auto, again, something widely accepted by police or military. I've addressed caliber before. The minimum is 38 or 9mm unless there's a situation where you can't carry anything bigger like a 22 or 25 or 32. That's fine. Small gun is better than no gun.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the ultimate court-proof gun would be the identical firearm and the identical ammunition. You know, we have a phobia for hollow point bullets in a state. But again, if I lived in Belleville, if I had a Glock 21 with 230 grain, you know, lawman bullets, ranger bullets, plus P hollow points, I want to see the prosecutor argue that I was using a gun that was excessive inherent safety designs, or I fired it accidentally, et cetera. They're going to have to go after my training, and they're going to have to go after my judgment at this point. They're not going to be able to go after that. And there is a book called Cute Lawyer Tricks, and there's a companion video. Masad Ayoub wrote it. And let me tell you something. In there, he talks about tricks like this, how lawyers have used this to say that you must have fired accidentally. Another great gun to fall back on, especially if you were a traveler, if I owned a house in a foreign country, would be the Beretta M9 92FS.
Hmm.
All of our military carries the Beretta 92FS. So that would be another great court-proof gun.
Now, I have that as a home defense gun also.
Let's see. Now, again, if a prosecutor argued that you did something wrong, your lawyer could turn around and say, well, wait a minute. The entire U.S. military carries that firearm.
Yeah.
How could it have inherent problems? How could it be this? How could it be that? Et cetera, et cetera. As far as ammo, we should talk about ammo. You shouldn't carry reloads or your own loaded ammunition when you're when your home defense gun. You should have new factory ammo. A, it's more dependable. B, it's more court-proof. There was a case once where someone shot someone with a 44 Magnum with hand loads, and the prosecutor's argument was that the shooter, the homeowner, a.k.a. shooter, must have been a Dirty Harry wannabe and was loading man-killer bullets and was dying to try them on human flesh.
Okay.
That never would have been introduced if he shot 44 special hollow points out of that revolver.
Right. Because it came out of the box from Winchester.
Correct. The other thing to think about in court-proofing your gun, especially for the new people out there, new shooters, is any type of gunsmithing or work or modifications on your gun, including changing the trigger pull, can land you in a shitload of trouble. If you've lightened the trigger or if you've modified the gun, and when I say gunsmithing, in New Jersey, there is no such thing as a gunsmith. A gunsmith is construed by the state police as someone who has an FFL and deals in firearms, and they consider you a gunsmith. I construe a gunsmith as being someone who's certified, who's gone through gunsmithing and armorer schools that can back it up. If you have someone change the trigger on your Glock, it better not be lower than what most police departments carry, like 5.5 or 8.5 pound trigger. If you put a ghost drop-in trigger at 2 pounds or something, the first thing prosecutors do in a shooting is they take that gun and they measure the trigger pull.
Really?
Yep, they measure the trigger pull. And if it's got a hair trigger, they're going to argue that, Sandy, you must have fired accidentally under stress. You didn't intend to fire.
Now, what about just easing out a trigger, you know, just trying to make it work a little bit
smoother?
Better. Yeah.
Again, if it's a savvy prosecutor and savvy forensic people, it can be used against you. Your best bet is a bone stock gun with no other modifications than a normal police department would make to the gun, like maybe night sights. But anything with the operation, with the trigger and safeties and stuff, the prosecutor can argue that you made that gun, you created an unsafe environment with that gun.
Wow.
And this is something that everybody should be aware of. So if you're down in your basement, you know, honing away at the sear and making the gun a lighter trigger, or your friend Joe is a backyard gunsmith. I'm a gun plumber. I'm not a gunsmith. I only strip guns down to, you know, the basic 4 or 5 parts. I clean them and I reassemble them. I don't make any qualms about it. It's just not my thing. I'm not a mechanical guy like that.
Yeah, you really need to know what you're doing.
Yeah, and again, working on your own gun can backfire on you. So it's something that you really need to think about. Look at what your police are carrying. Look at what the state police are carrying. I don't know what the Pennsylvania state police are carrying or local police. Less and less police departments are carrying revolvers. There are some sheriff's departments that have hand-me-downs that are carrying revolvers, some security companies in this state. But I would recommend factory ammunition. I recommend a factory gun as stock as possible. Any modifications that are done to it should be done through a reputable, licensed gunsmith who is in business. Again, not Joe that you work with that you gave him the gun and he lightened the trigger up for you or something. Don't forget, a lighter trigger, especially on a revolver, could have lighter hits on the primer, which could cause the gun to not fire.
Again,
you better shoot it 500-600 rounds to make sure it's going to perform flawlessly for you. So when you're looking for a firearm, I'm a big advocate of Striker-fired guns today. I'm an old-fashioned 1911 guy, cocked and locked, but Striker-fired guns like your Glock, your M&P, your XD, your Ruger XR9, and now FN is coming out with a Striker-fired gun in a month or two. I'm getting a free one. We're raffling it off at our NRA dinner in September.
Very nice.
FN promised me one of their new Striker-fired guns. We're going to intro it in the New York metropolitan area.
Is that a 9mm?
It's going to start with a 9mm. They're going after the NATO contracts because the Beretta is up for another renewal next year. So court-proof guns, revolvers are nice. You know, weapon-mounted lights are not a detriment today because a lot of police officers and police departments and SWAT teams use them. So that can't hurt. Just remember a continuously on light is also a bullet magnet.
Yeah.
So something for you to think about, an instant on light would be a lot better. You know, again, we could debate lasers and everything, but I really don't want to get into that. We've talked about it before. So think about your firearm. If your firearm is, you know, grandpa's gun that's been modified extensively, or it was your old IPSC or IDPA gun with a 2.5 pound trigger on it.
Yeah, time to rethink that.
Yeah, you really should be thinking, and it's loaded with your own hand loads because you used to load them a lot and you have a lot of confidence in them. Back in the day when I first started shooting, all the guys used to use hollow base wad cutters for home defense bullets because they were like, well, they'll leave nice clean holes in the guy when I shoot him. A prosecutor can find some fault in that.
Yeah,
and you might find
yourself
on a stand fighting for something where you didn't want to be fighting for. Much rather you fight for the real issues rather than a technicality. So something to think about. Any more questions, Sandy?
Well, I think it's more personal. I mean, you and I are both wheel gun guys too, and you carry as your backup gun a revolver also. I can't see myself carrying my M&P as a regular carry gun.
Too big?
It's too big. I mean, you see the way I dress mostly.
More and more people are carrying pocket guns, like 380s now. I'm not a big advocate of a 380. They are coming out with more compact guns. Ruger just came out with an SR9C, which is a flat, you know, compact 9mm. Six Hours coming out with a 9mm gun for carry, too. I'm a big wheel gun advocate. At home, I use the Smith & Wesson Night Guard, which is the 8-shot revolver. So think about that.
Yeah, sounds pretty good to me. Time to rethink what I do. And definitely time to, start getting on the airplane through TSA.
Yes.
Well, you're coming with me next week then.
Okay.
Because you got to walk me through
TSA. I'll carry your guns for you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Anytime.
All right. When we come back, we're going to get to our talkbacks. This portion of Gun for Hire Radio is being brought to you by Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer. I got a lawyer, not everything. I got a lawyer, and he's on my side. Me and my lawyer, we can kick your ass in court. I got a lawyer, if I pay him on time. For over 20 years, attorney Evan Knappen has seen what rotten laws do to good people. That's why he's dedicated his life to fighting for the rights of New Jersey gun owners. A fearsome courtroom litigator, one of the first lawyers to ever get a federal injunction against a state gun law. An unrelenting gun rights spokesman, tearing away at the anti-gun propaganda to expose the truth. Author of 5 best-selling books on gun rights, including Knappen on New Jersey Gun Law. The bright orange gun law Bible that sits atop the desk of virtually every lawyer, police chief, firearms dealer, and savvy gun owner in New Jersey. That's what's made Evan Knappen New Jersey's gun lawyer. New Jersey gun laws are designed to make you a criminal. Don't become the victim of New Jersey's vicious anti-gun legal system. This is the guy you want on your side. Keep his name and phone number on a post-it note attached to your New Jersey firearms ID card in your wallet, and hope you'll never have to use it. But if you live, work, or travel through New Jersey with a firearm, the deck is already stacked against you. Keep his number with you always. You can find him on the web at evannappen.com, or take the link from the Gun for Hire Radio resource page. Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer. Okay, we're back.
Excuse me.
You're excused.
Talkbacks. I got 2 talkbacks emailed to me. One was actually posted on the Gun for Hire Tumblr account, which went viral on Twitter and Facebook. And I posted an answer online, and then about 35 Gun for Hire listeners and followers posted their opinions also. So let me give you my opinion here. This comes from Mike from South Amboy, New Jersey. Real easy question here. What is best, 40 or 45? Well, Mike, I can spend a leisurely 6.5 weeks discussing this argument
If we do it, we could get 15 guys in a bar who could have this discussion forever. Huh?
The great debate, stopping power. I've read tons of books on ballistics. I'm reading one now, a lot of math in it, Firearms Ballistics. And I also read Stopping Power by Ed Sano and Evan Marshall, which are great books. 40 is a very hot round, hyper hot round. 45 is a slower round, more mass. My old school bones tell me I'd rather shoot a fatter, slowing moving bullet than a faster, smaller bullet. So 9mm would be disqualified. But let's talk about this, Mike. 40, if you can shoot a 40 good, great round to go with. More modern than a 45. But I'm a 45 guy. I like bigger holes at a little slower pace. But if you have smaller hands, you know, the 45 you carry might not hold as many rounds. So I'm going to twist the argument. Rather than talk about best caliber, let's talk about shot placement, more importantly. You could have a friggin' pea shooter, and if you hit the guy in the eye, you're going to neutralize him.
Yeah.
All right? So with a pea through a straw, for anybody that heard us know what a pea shooter is. When I was a kid, they used to sell bags of peas and a straw.
And a straw.
And
yeah,
a straw. They
absolutely.
Don't, you know, could you imagine that today, the liability? Shut his eye out.
You would need a pistol permit in New Jersey for that.
Imagine that, New Jersey, a pea shooter permit.
Why the hell not? I mean, a slingshot's banned in this thing.
But, you know what? Maybe we should cut this whole pea shooter thing, because the antis might get on it and they might really ban them. Spitballs will be next.
King Bloomberg.
pea shooters and then spitballs.
That's right.
So, Mike, getting back to what's best, a 40 or 45, even a 9mm, R40 or 45, R38, whatever you're going to practice with more. You know, three misses with a 40 is worse than one hit with a 45.
Amen to that.
And if you're going to buy affordable ammo, if you can get 9mm ammo for $10 a box and 40 is $18 a box and 45 is $18 a box, you'll probably practice twice as much with the 9mm because the ammo is more affordable. So I'd rather you hit the bad guy three times with a smaller caliber than miss him two times and only hit him once with a larger caliber. So as far as what is best, I really can't give a clear-cut answer. I can only give opinions. There's a lot more ballistic data for 38s and 9mm because police departments carried those for many, many more years. 40 is a fairly new round. It's only about 86, 96, 2006, about 20 years, and it's really starting to come into its modern age the past 10 years with police departments and stuff. 45 has obviously been around for 100 years. We do have some more military data from field surgeons working on people. So I do prefer a 45 over a 40, my personal opinion. But again, shot placement is key. Separate wound channels and shot placement is more important than caliber.
Now, how do you feel about this newfangled ammunition that's going on? I mean, stuff not like Corban, but the frangible type of stuff.
The jury's still out on it. There's not enough data. Plus, again, it's very expensive. We've addressed this before. It's expensive with a semi-auto.
Yeah, especially if you're saying 500 rounds.
You got to shoot 500 right? rounds out
you
of
need
a semi-auto.
A mortgage.
Yep, you got to shoot 500 rounds out of your semi-auto of any type of this exotic ammo. You got to shoot about 50 rounds out of your revolver before you deem it safe. So I would go with tried and true ammo. Again, in New Jersey, it is illegal to have hollow point bullets for home defense. It is only illegal if the hollow point bullet is used in the act or commission of a crime.
Now, what about you are found guilty of excessive force? Now you get an added...
For the hollow points.
For the hollow
points. You will get charged separately for the hollow points.
Wow.
But again, I'd rather be tried by 12 than carried by 6.
Yeah, that makes more
sense.
So
I'd rather fight it in court and be alive than be dead and not be able to fight it.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's my answer to you, Mike. I have another talk back.
Great.
I have a talk back from Jeremy. He just says Jeremy in Pennsylvania. Again, a broad question. What are the travel laws from state to state? I live in PA and want to come to New Jersey to shoot.
Do you want to do that, Jeremy? We all live in New Jersey and want to come to PA to shoot.
Exactly. Well, maybe Jeremy wants to come for an IDPA or IPSC match or something on in Central Jersey. You know, there could be a Glock match going
on. We're still allowed to have those matches?
Well, yeah, because the antis don't know about them at this point. So Jeremy, what are the travel laws? Well, you are covered, aside from the Brian Aitken case, very high-profile case, you are covered under federal and state transportation laws that state if your firearm is empty and in a locked or fastened case and your ammo is in a separate locked or fastened case and you're heading to and from something that you're doing. You're not just wandering aimlessly in New Jersey, driving around sightseeing and, you know, looking for something to eat and going back home. But if you're going to a match or you're going to a range and you have information on you to substantiate that, you're covered under federal and state laws as long as it's construed properly. Now, I don't know lifestyle, but this would not be a time to drink and drive. It would not be a time to even have one beer with lunch when you're transporting, going to an event. It wouldn't be a good time if you smoked marijuana to have a half a joint in your ashtray or something.
Yeah, that'd probably
this would be
a
time to clean up your act, assuming you're a law-abiding citizen. Going from your home in Pennsylvania to a range in New Jersey that you can shoot would be totally legal. What you could do is, to back it up, is print out a brochure of what you're going to do. Like Central Jersey's website says, we're having a Glock match today. So you print it out. So if a cop pulled you over, where are you heading? I'm heading to, you know, Central Jersey rifle and pistol. And I have a match that I have to attend to today. Oh, okay. You have your firearm. Sure, it's locked up. Gun is locked up. Ammo's locked up. You don't fit the profile. There's no vodka on your breath, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You would be fine. But people are phobic about that, traveling through gun phobic states like New Jersey and New York. We always used to worry all the time in New York, traveling through the island of Manhattan in the five barrels, because I would go out to New York. Me and Charlie and a few other guys used to shoot on the Long Island Pistol Shooters Association. We had a team Bullet Hole. Manny used to sponsor a shooting team. And we used to go out there for three gun matches and steel challenges and bowling pin matches and everything. And we always used to be nervous driving through Manhattan.
Yeah.
When in fact it is legal to drive.
It is legal.
Yes, it is. People think you can't drive through Manhattan with a gun, but how the hell would you get to Long Island?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
So,
right.
You have to
go through it. Yeah.
So it is legal to do, and I've done it tens of times.
You just can't stop, right?
You're not supposed to stop. Okay. Again, it's only stops that are necessary. Like if you had to stop for gas or a breakdown, your car, not a nervous breakdown, but you know, I'm in New York,
I'm having a nervous breakdown.
Not covered. You know, it's elusive whether it's allowed bathroom breaks or a quick stop to get something to eat. You know, it says stops that are reasonable stops. So,
which they can use against you or not.
They can use it for you or against you, yes. So you have to be really careful with that. So it's one more thing we have to worry about.
Now, what about him? Okay, let's just say someone comes to New Jersey and then he needs to stay overnight and go to a two-day shoot.
Yeah, that's probably a felony in the state of New Jersey.
Great.
Okay, but again, if he locked the gun up in a case and kept it in his hotel room, which is his home or domicile for that evening, he would not be breaking any laws.
But we've got a story coming up in the future about
that.
I can't discuss it right now
because it's in appeals. But I have a real shocker for you that I heard from a lawyer that just pled a case in Warren County. And I can't get to any more details than that other than the judge needs to be tarred and feathered.
Yeah, judge needs to have the judge's head examined.
Yeah, and you know what? And one of the reasons why we're doing this, well, both of us know this, is because we're both pissed off and we don't want to move. Yeah. I don't want to vote with my feet. I was just responding to a thread on New Jersey Gun Forms yesterday about people saying they're going to move out of state when the kids graduate high school, etc. I don't want to move. My family's here, my business here, my friends. I like the restaurants. I like a lot of being in this area. Why do I have to move to exercise my Second Amendment rights?
Right.
That's a big reason why Gun for Hire Radio is existing, because of that, because I'm pissed off and I'm not moving.
Yeah, we're not going to take it anymore, especially lying down. We'll be right back.
This portion of Gun for Hire Radio is being brought to you by Gun for Hire Firearms Academy, America's urban defense institute for over 30 years. With four state-of-the-art facilities in New Jersey, two of them just minutes from New York City and Philadelphia, offering indoor and outdoor training, moving and shooting, tactical weapons training, baton, handcuff, and mace, executive protection training and certification, multi-state CCW permits, and armed security and retired law enforcement qualifications. Gun for Hire Academy is equipped with a state-of-the-art FATS, Firearms Training Simulator, and is the only training facility in the world approved for civilian, force-on-force, simmunitions training. Whether you're a beginner who's never touched a gun, or a seasoned professional looking to keep your skills sharp, you'll find something tailored just for you at Gun for Hire. Flying in from out of town? We'll pick you up at the airport. Find out more at gunforhire.com. Train where the pros do. Gun for Hire, America's Urban Defense Institute.
You know, we'd love to have you participate in our show, and you can do just that by emailing us your questions, comments, suggestions for future show topics, or any gun-related news or events that are happening in the tri-state area to talkback@gunforhireradio.com. You can download our shows directly from iTunes, Zoom, or right from our website at gunforhireradio.com. And you can keep abreast of the latest news and events by following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Ning.
Okay.
Oh, God, we're back.
We're back?
Yes, we are.
Sorry about that. A little laughter during the break. We're talking about how pissed off we are in the state of New Jersey and the
Talking about dinner, too. You know? I'm starving, man.
Dinner.
All right. So, what are you reading, Ed?
Just read a great book. The book is called Black Hawk Down, written by Mark Bowden. And you really need to read this book. It's, you know, everybody's seen the movie.
Yeah.
And one of the military gentlemen who passed away in the book is from New Jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's the one that got shot in the femur His father is actually a member of our range in Cherry Ridge. So, you know, he passed away during Black Hawk Down.
Wow.
And it's interesting, but what a lot of people don't realize is that after Black Hawk Down, the U.S. military forever changed its fighting tactics. It led to extensive urban combat training for combat forces and improvements to tactical combat casualty care. Some of our urban classes that we teach at Gun for Hire use the same tactics that the military adopted after the Somalia incident, including training for quick clot.
Listeners who don't know, what is quick clot?
Quick clot is you put it on a bleeding wound and it solidifies and clots it and prevents you from bleeding further.
So you don't bleed out.
So you don't bleed
to death
out.
Before
Correct.
Help comes.
And, you know, we had that Fairfield officer that was shot five times and he sustained an injury similar to the gentleman in Somalia. He was shot in a femur. And one of the responding officers that was got there first had quick clot and was trained by my instructor on the use of quick clot. And the Fairfield officer attributes part of his being saved because the officer was on a scene with the quick clot.
Wow.
So I bear a direct link to that. One of my head instructors, my weapons and tactics instructor, taught that Fairfield officer how to use quick clot, and he applied it on a brother officer who saved him.
One documented save right there.
And it's amazing how it comes from Black Hawk Down in Somalia, and it ends up in Gun for Hire in Belleville and Fairfield, New Jersey.
Well, you've done it again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Gun for Hire Radio. This episode of Gun for Hire Radio has been brought to you by The Bullet Hole, North Jersey's gun authority for over 25 years. By Lipstick Bodyguard, like having a personal bodyguard in your purse or pocket. By Evan Knappen, New Jersey's gun lawyer. And by Gun for Hire Firearms Academy, America's Urban Defense Institute for over 30 years. Find out more at gunforhire.com. Gun for Hire Radio is a Counterthink Radio production. Our online technical director and webmaster is Jose. Hey, who ate my chicharrones? Morales. Our art director is Matt, the Yo-Yo Man, Danchis. Our post-production engineer is John, who said there would be free beer, Massa. And our production assistant for this week's episode was Danielle, don't use my real name, Lawson. The music used in this broadcast was managed by Cosmo Music, LLC, New York, New York, under license of Broadcast Music Incorporated. I'm Sandy Berardi. On behalf of my co-host, Master Trainer Anthony Calandro, and the rest of the crew here at Gun for Hire Radio, thanks for listening. And please, take a moment to rub it in the faces of all those anti-gun liberals, and give this episode an outstanding rating on iTunes and Zoom. See you next week.
This gun's for hire.